Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer. It is January 4th, 2021, and I will be reading today from the Decatur Herald and Review, and we start on the front page with an article titled, A Little Snow Fun. Residents take advantage of biggest snowfall of the season. Paul Harmon, 8, wondered how his Sunday would be spent after a power outage left his home without electricity. Luckily, several inches of snow blanketed the Decatur area overnight and provided the perfect opportunity to go sledding. The boy accompanied his father, Greg, on an afternoon trip to Rural King in Decatur to purchase sleds and spend the rest of the day speeding down a hill near his house. Paul, holding his newly purchased sled, said this would be his third time getting to go sledding. We have this super huge 45-foot elevation hill that's super high up, Paul said excitedly, so we're going to sled down that. On Sunday, residents in Decatur and surrounding counties woke up to the heaviest snowfall this winter. Weather officials Sunday morning said about 4 to 8 inches of snow had accumulated and was significantly more than the high of 2 inches that had been forecast. It was very unusual that there was a very narrow band of heavy snow that just persisted for a few hours, said Chuck Schaefer, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Areas between northeast of Springfield and near Bloomington to west of Champaign to down near Decatur received the highest amounts of 3 to 4 inches. Then a very narrow corridor from near Decatur along Interstate 72 in Macon County had some isolated 8 to 10 inch reports. It was quite unusual to see those amounts pile up so quickly and over such a small area. The Piatt County town of Cisco received 9.8 inches, according to the NWS. Decatur and Monticello each received 8 inches. Mount Zion reported 7 inches. Clinton reported 6 inches. In Lincoln, 4.8 inches fell and 4.1 inches fell in Hayworth. Schaefer said the snow isn't expected to stay long, as fairly mild temperatures in the high 40s are predicted for the next few days that should contribute to melting the snow. No major weather systems are expected over the next several days either, according to Schaefer. The Harmons were far from the only area residents taking advantage of the snow, as many Rural King customers were purchasing sleds and snow shovels that afternoon. Shoppers at the Airport Plaza Kroger around the same time could be seen placing snow shovels next to their grocery items. Ron Wade, 52, and his daughter Savannah, 11, were among those sled shopping at the Farm and Home Store with plans to hit the hills at Nelson Park. Wade said they've enjoyed sledding at Forsyth Park in the past because they have a really steep slope there. She used to have a sled, but we must have gotten rid of it, so we're out shopping for a new one, he said. Some families wasted no time making a day out of enjoying the snow. A couple dozen people as early as Sunday morning were seen sledding down the various hills of Nelson Park and participating in snowball fights. Carly Cooper, 10, said the best part of the day was getting to have quality time with her mother. This is my first time sledding, Carly said. It's just amazing outside and time to get out of the house. The day certainly provided a chance at getting to do some fun and rare activities, only possible with several inches of snow. But some residents decided to spend it helping those in their community. Alan Dobrynek, around 8 a.m., fired up his snowplow and started clearing the snow from homes in his Decatur cul-de-sac, something he's done since he moved to the area 13 years ago. The 54-year-old spent the day clearing driveways for the elderly residents in the neighborhood and was in the middle of clearing the sidewalk, circling the cul-de-sac, a little past noon. There's a lot of older people that use this as a track to walk on, Dobrynek said. I just try to keep it up for them. Marty Watkins, 58, was also working to clear snow around his neighborhood, starting around 8:30 a.m. Watkins couldn't have guessed he'd be clearing several inches of snow. I was surprised, for it being the first snowfall. We knew it was coming, we just didn't know how much. The neighbors, we all got out and helped one another to dig out and clean the sidewalks and the driveways, he said. That's what neighbors are all about, helping one another. And continuing on the front page, Trump presses Georgia official to find votes. President Donald Trump pressured Georgia's Republican Secretary of State to find enough votes to overturn Joe Biden's win in the state's presidential election, repeatedly citing disproven claims of fraud and raising the prospect of criminal offense if officials did not change the vote count, according to recording of the conversation. The phone call with Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger on Saturday was the latest step in an unprecedented effort by a sitting president to pressure a state official to reverse the outcome of a free and fair election that he lost. The president, who has refused to accept his loss to Democratic President-elect Biden, repeatedly argued that Raffensperger could change the certified results. All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, Trump said, because we won the state. Georgia counted its votes three times before certifying Biden's win by an 11,779 margin. Raffensperger noted, President Trump, we've had several lawsuits, and we've had to respond in court to the lawsuits and the contentions. We don't agree that you have won. Audio snippets of the conversation were first posted online by the Washington Post. The Associated Press obtained the full audio of Trump's conversation with Georgia officials from a person on the call. The AP has a policy of not amplifying disinformation and unproven allegations. The AP will post the full audio as it annotates a transcript with fact-check material. Trump's renewed intervention and the persistent and unfounded claims of fraud come nearly 2 weeks before he leaves office and 2 days before twin runoff elections in Georgia that will determine political control of the U.S. Senate. The president used the hour-long conversation to tick through a list of claims about the election in Georgia, including that hundreds of thousands of ballots mysteriously appeared in Fulton County, which includes Atlanta. Officials have said there is no evidence of that happening. The Georgia officials on the call are heard repeatedly pushing back against the president's assertions, telling him that he's relying on debunked theories and, in one case, selectively edited video. At another point in the conversation, Trump appeared to threaten Raffensperger and Ryan Germany, the Secretary of State's legal counsel, by suggesting both could be criminally liable if they failed to find that thousands of ballots in Fulton County had been illegally destroyed. There is no evidence to support Trump's claim. That's a criminal offense, Trump says, and you can't let that happen. Others on the call included Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, and attorneys assisting Trump, including Washington lawyer Cleta Mitchell. Democrats and a few Republicans condemned Trump's actions, while at least one Democrat urged a criminal investigation. Biden senior advisor Bob Bauer called the recording irrefutable proof of Trump pressuring and threatening an official in his own party to rescind a state's lawful certified vote count and fabricate another in its place. It captures the whole disgraceful story about Donald Trump's assault on American democracy, Bauer said. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, the number two Democrat in that chamber, said Trump's conduct merits nothing less than a criminal investigation. Trump confirmed in a tweet Sunday that he had spoken with Raffensperger. The White House referred questions to Trump's reelection campaign, which did not respond Sunday to an emailed request for comment. Raffensperger's office did not respond to a request for comment. Trump has repeatedly attacked how Raffensperger conducted Georgia's elections, claiming without evidence that the state's 16 electoral votes were wrongly given to Biden. "He has no clue," Trump tweeted of Raffensperger, saying the state official was unwilling or unable to answer questions. Raffensperger's Twitter response, "Respectfully, President Trump, what you're saying is not true. The truth will come out." Various election officials across the country and Trump's former Attorney General William Barr have said there was no widespread fraud in the election. Republican governors in Arizona and Georgia, key battleground states crucial to Biden's victory, have also vouched for the integrity of their state elections. And moving to the local and nation page, camping wish comes true. Mattoon girl receives camper from Make-A-Wish. An aptly named little girl, Journey Campton, has traveled quite a path during her 3 years. Now, though, thanks to an effort of generosity, she and her family will be able to take part in different kinds of trips. Journey's mom, Megan Campton, said the girl has had health issues all her life and was first diagnosed with cancer 3 years ago. 8 rounds of chemotherapy pretty much beat it at the time, but it returned a year ago. After radiation treatment, Journey is now set for surgery in about 2 weeks, as another possibly cancerous spot was found recently. Campton said the prognosis won't be known until after tests take place. Campton also said something Journey's done since birth is traveling and camping, activities limited by her medical issues and the coronavirus pandemic. "We haven't really got out to do much outdoor stuff the last 2 years," she said. On Sunday, however, several of Journey's friends and supporters made sure there was a way to give the family a chance to start taking part in the trips they enjoy. Thanks to a grant from the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Journey's family received a camper that was presented to them after about 24 vehicles filled with well-wishers drove past the family's home on Marshall Avenue. The vehicles first lined up in the parking lot of Mark's My Store a few blocks away. Mattoon police cars and fire trucks led the way, something for which retired firefighter Mike Bridges said he was doubly grateful, as he's Journey's grandfather. "They're a great bunch," he said of the fire department crews. During the parade, passers-by tossed toys, candy, and other items to Journey and her family as they drove by their home. Journey appeared to not know quite what to think of the parade, though she took part in picking up the gifts and did smile a bit later when she first got to go inside the camper. "I think she slightly understood," her mom said with a chuckle, adding that she was surprised with and grateful for the number of vehicles that took part in the parade. Local Make-A-Wish representatives Brenda Henry and Diane Ratliff were on hand Sunday to help present what they said is a gift that's becoming more popular with wish recipients. "They're very popular now with COVID," Ratliff said. Henry said they first visited with Journey's family a few months ago, learning about Journey's story and how the family camped in tents since Journey was a baby. It was another example of the organization's efforts to provide families with ill children with something they'll enjoy, she said. It gives kids hope and something to look forward to, something to think about other than their illnesses, Henry said. And next, Bethany, home to first babies of 2021. The small town of Bethany grew by at least two already this year, having laid claim to the first babies born at each of Decatur's hospitals. Decatur Memorial Hospital announced Sunday that Luke Martin Heiser was born at 7:25 p.m. on January 1st. Luke is the firstborn child of Carson and Rosario Heiser of Bethany. He weighed 7 pounds 12 ounces and was 21 inches in length. Sean and Tiffany Kottner of Bethany welcomed Harrison at 7:20 a.m. Friday at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. Harrison weighs 8 pounds and 7.6 ounces and is 21 inches long. And next, state reports 81 more COVID-19 deaths. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 4,369 new confirmed and probable cases of the coronavirus disease in Illinois on Sunday, and an additional 81 deaths. A woman in her 70s from Christian County and two women in their 80s from Sangamon County were among the deaths reported Sunday. Because of the timing of state data reporting, some individual county health departments may have previously reported information about deaths in their areas. Illinois Department of Public Health is reporting a total of 979,821 cases, including 16,755 deaths through Saturday. As of Saturday night, 3,817 Illinois residents were reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 798 patients were in the ICU, and 462 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators. The preliminary 7-day statewide test positivity from December 27th through Saturday is 9.6%. The rate was also 9.6% in Saturday's report. And continuing on this page, Better Job could start with online tool. Job seekers can try to increase their earning power with a new online federal database that matches the skills a worker uses in a low-paying job with those in a more lucrative position. The Federal Reserve Banks of Philadelphia and Cleveland launched the Occupational Mobility Explorer after a research report released in June that studied the 33 largest labor markets in the United States. The study found that the skills involved in 49% of lower-wage jobs pair up with similar yet higher-paying jobs in the same labor market, according to Keith Wardrip, Community Development Research Manager at the Philadelphia Fed and an author of the report. By using the tool, for example, bill collectors in Philadelphia would discover that they have many of the skills needed for a post as a credit counselor, a job that pays about 45% more, federal officials said. Fed researchers defined lower wage jobs as paying below median wages, roughly below a range of $37,000 to $40,000. Some of the jobs that fall within the lower wage group include retail sales and food service cashiers, positions hard hit by the pandemic. Researchers found 4,100 top transitions, or pairings of occupations that shared similar skills in the same labor market, but with one of the jobs paying at least 10% more. The higher paying position, should also not require a college degree to qualify as a top transition job. You know, roughly two-thirds of American adults don't have a college degree, Wardrip said, and we wanted to shine a light on the fact that the labor market doesn't include just two types of jobs, lower-wage jobs and jobs for college-educated people. We wanted to figure out, through our most recent research and through the tool, how can we help workers transition into better-paying jobs? According to 2018 figures from the U.S. Census Bureau, about 20% of adults have a bachelor's degree, and 8.5% more hold a master's. Fed officials called this middle ground of jobs opportunity occupations. We found that just under 22% of all employment meets our definition of opportunity employment, Wardrip said. Though imagined as an aid for workers, the tool also might show employers that many lower-wage workers might have transferable skills in ways that may not be apparent, Fed officials said. Wardrip cautioned that his tool paired similar jobs, not identical ones. So some level of reskilling or upskilling will be required, he said. Users can find the free online tool at https://www.philadelphiafed.org/surveys-and-data/community-development-data/occupational-mobility-explorer. To find a job with a similar set of skills and a promise of at least a 10% pay increase, users navigate to a Build Your Path screen. There, they input their original occupation and metro area from a drop-down menu. The software responds with alternative jobs, scored mathematically by their degree of match. The Fed researchers were quick to point out that their analysis was theoretical, not based on workers from one job to another. Fed officials said the economic turmoil stirred by the pandemic gave their research an added urgency. The researchers focused on occupations that would likely be around over the next 10 years. The recommended transitions are all to destination occupations, projected to grow or decline only slightly over the next decade. And next, court to rule on cannabis license dispute. The stage is set for a decisive legal battle in Illinois' highest court between a large, well-established company and a far smaller upstart over a cannabis-growing license potentially worth millions. The long-running case between Curative Health Cultivation, LLC, and Medponics, Illinois, LLC, is expected to be heard by the Illinois Supreme Court early in 2021, the Chicago Tribune reported. Aurora-based Curative, owned by New York-based Columbia Care, one of the world's largest cannabis operators, was granted the coveted license in 2015, then lost it after a lower court ruled against it, before managing to get that ruling reversed on appeal. Medponics, which wants to set up operations in Zion, hopes that the high court will side with it, clearing the way for it to secure the license. It would use it to launch a large-scale cannabis business that would include a hydroponics greenhouse in Zion, just north of Chicago near the Wisconsin border. The city of Zion has backed Medponics' bid for the license with expectations that a land lease deal with the company could generate some $1.5 million in new revenue for the cash-strapped city that was hit hard financially by the closure of a major nuclear plant in 1998. "This is just the right thing to do, to award the license to them," said the city's administrator, David Knabel. Many city leaders in Aurora, a suburb just west of Chicago, have been equally vocal in their support for Curative's claims to the license. The license in question, which is among the last of its kind to be disputed in court, would enable the production of large amounts of marijuana for medical and recreational uses, making it more lucrative than more recent and restrictive permits, according to the Tribune. Retail cannabis sales in Illinois were expected to top $1 billion for 2020, and the kind of large-scale operation envisioned by the holder of the contested license could be valued at around $100 million, financial analyst Matt Carnes of Green Wave Advisors in New York City estimated. The legal issues in the case are complex. They are focused on the vetting process of the companies who vied for such licenses some 5 years ago. Medponics said that while Curative did receive the highest rating of the companies considered, it should have been disqualified because its operations would be too close to an area zoned exclusively for residential purposes. The lower court judge, Michael Foos, agreed with Medponics in a lawsuit it filed in 2017, saying in his written ruling that Illinois' Agriculture Department didn't properly apply state law in picking Curative. "The award of the license to Curative is therefore clearly erroneous. The court has the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made," Foos wrote. And from the Everyday Cheapskate column, "Worried you might lose your job?" Before the pandemic hit, employment in the U.S. was reaching historic highs. Now, in the wake of the coronavirus, many who are fortunate enough to have a job are suffering from lingering anxiety about the future. Worried about layoffs? You're not alone. Millions of Americans are worried that they will lose their jobs due to the current state of the economy. Losing a job can be a terrible blow, especially if you are already living paycheck to paycheck. But if that loss comes without warning, the emotional toll on top of the financial loss can be devastating. No matter your situation, whether you have suffered a recent layoff, are worried that you might, or believe there isn't the slightest possibility that you could find yourself unemployed, don't become a passive victim by default. First, become the CEO. Take charge. Promote yourself to chief executive officer of your life. Develop strength and confidence in your ability to take control of your life. That means having contingency plans in place. For example, know exactly what you will do if you are laid off next Friday. And next, give yourself 6 months' notice. If you found out that you would lose your job 6 months from today, what would you do? That's the question I asked a group of people recently. While the answers ranged all the way from panic to celebrate because I hate my job anyway, overall, there was a sense of calm. Most respondents said 6 months would be more than enough time to figure out the solution and find another job. That's a nice thought, but in reality, a 6-month notice of termination is highly unlikely. Most job layoffs come with little advance notice, if any. If your new role as the CEO of your life make it your top priority to get ready for an extended period of unemployment, give yourself 6 months' notice to get prepared. Build an emergency fund and consume less. Being prepared is a great antidote for anxiety and stress. And this has been the first half hour from the Decatur Herald and Review for January 4th, 2021. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour. I hope you'll stay tuned.